Welcome into the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this week's episode, we'll be talking about the NFL, what's happening weeks 13 and 14. We'll have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We will talk about the NBA and what's happening there. And of course, we'll have our college football two-minute drill. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports on all of your favorite social medias, Instagram, X, Facebook, Threads, and the sort. Now, as always, sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good.
Look, this is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die, it's where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake. He can never show you fake.
If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you. He gon' tell it to you. He gon' tell it.
This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight. To you straight.
Welcome into the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome in. Yeah, I'm recording this on Wednesday evening. By the time you guys hear this, it'll be Thursday morning. But welcome into the show. So happy to be talking with you guys. Planning on this being a shorter show. I know I've said that the last three shows. But I am planning on this being a shorter show. Kind of get right into the meat of the information. You'll hear more of the fluff and stuff, as always, from the YouTube show. So make sure you guys subscribe to that if you want a little more banter. But the audio show is more your hard-hitting facts, more of your my opinion. The YouTube show is more of the back-and-forth banter with Jai from the Hey Jai Podcast. Both shows are produced by IMS Productions. Now, let's get right to the thick of it. We had NFL Week 13 last week, just wrapped up on Monday night. We had our Thanksgiving trio of games. The Cowboys keep finding a way to win. Now, again, they played the Giants. We're not going to sit here and pretend like it was this world life-changing win and, oh, my God, the Cowboys have figured it out and they're going to go on this run. No, because we're adults. So we're not going to do that. We are adults. We're not going to do that at all. We're not going to sit here and say the Cowboys have faded out. Their quarterback is still Cooper Rush. And their head coach is still Mike McCarthy, and their owner is still Jerry Jones. Ultimately, they have solved nothing. However, they did get a pretty important win over the New York Giants, who were going through their own weird turmoil thing post-Daniel Jones, no Tommy DeVito. You know, I mean, the Giants were in a weird space, and they ended up having to start, Drew Locke, because Tommy DeVito had a forearm injury. That if the game was Sunday instead of Thursday, maybe DeVito gives it a go. Instead, ultimately, it ends up being on Thursday, so Drew Locke plays. He doesn't play awful. It's just the Cowboys. You could tell if lack of first-team reps were there. Just certain time and throws weren't there for Drew Locke. And Micah Parsons made a couple of big plays. And you had a couple of plays in the secondary. And you had one of the greater kick returns in Kevontae Turpin. And so when you have all these things mixed together, you have Doddle, who Mike McCarthy is a huge fan of. Rico Doddle. I'm a huge fan because I stole him in fantasy off the scrap heap because nobody picked him up. I just grabbed him. I traded for him, a day or two before Mike McCarthy has the press conference and Donald's our running back one. It's a great grab by me. And all in all, great win for the Cowboys. Hopefully trying to build a little momentum to at least make the NFC wild card spot interesting. The division's locked. It's going to Philly. And so Washington, to me, is going to get one of the wild card spots. But look at the NFC South, and I always do this. The NFC South is only putting in their champion. The NFC North, I think Lions and Packers. The NFC West probably is only putting in their champion. So that means the Cowboys still have a shot, realistically, at making the seventh seed in the NFC, which would be huge for them. Although it's probably best for them if they lose and get a better draft pick and get aggressive in free agency. The Miami Dolphins froze on the frozen tundra. What's new? Miami Dolphins goes north. It's below 40. They look like they've never played outside before. And then the Packers are masters at it. The Packers, two things you never want to see in the cold. You never want to see the Packers in the cold, and you never want to see the Bills in the cold. Both of those teams have mastered what we would consider outrageous weather. Weather that any logical human, you bet the under on like crazy. And then they go put 40, and you're like, how? But again, they're just used to it, and the Dolphins look like they froze. Tua's record under 40 degrees is absolutely awful. The Mike McDaniel era, I don't recall them ever winning a game when the weather's cold and it's under 40 degrees, because they froze in Kansas City. They froze in Green Bay. They just freeze. And you kind of like, you try to wonder how the teams up north prepare, because it's like, it's still the same cold, right? But if you think about it, when you go out in it every day, when you got to go to your car to go to practice and you're in it, when you got to go to Walmart, you're in it, when you got to walk to your home, you're in it, when you got to walk to a facility, you're in it. Like, when you're in it 2, 3, 4 weeks, playing in it is whatever. I'm sure those teams have an outside practice or two during the week to get your body used to taking the hits and the movements and the cuts in the cold weather. When you're in Miami, game's on Sunday, you flew in Friday night. You know what I'm saying? Like, you fly in Friday night, so you're in, well, that kind of game, you might be stuck. They might have you fly in Sunday morning or something when it clears up a little bit. So you really have no time to adjust to the weather, and then you're in it. It's definitely a major home field advantage in the frozen tundra of Green Bay. I don't think they're ever going to leave Lambeau Field for the sole purpose of, or if they do build, it's going to be an open top, because that is their major advantage. Is the cold weather, and they absolutely froze the Dolphins. Not a really great offensive game from the Packers. It's just when the other side is so putrid, it definitely shows. And the Chicago Bears, I'm not going to sit here and long wind about it. It's been talked about heavily. The end of that game was probably the worst clock management I've ever seen in my life. There is no way on God's green earth Caleb Williams gets sacked. He's a rookie, so I'm not going to say he shouldn't have took a sack. He shouldn't have, but I'm not going to bash his head in. He's trying to make a play. There's no reason on God's green earth Caleb Williams gets sacked with about 34 seconds left in field goal range, and the Chicago Bears not only never get a field goal off, they leave with the timeout. It was so bad, in fact, that Caleb Williams ultimately is the one who called the play on the last play of the game, because he was sitting there waiting on his coaches to call a play. That never occurred. So he takes it to his own hands and go, well, I guess we gotta go. And ultimately, he said, I guess we gotta take a shot at the end zone to try and win the game. And that is how the game ends. Or as I call it, an abject disaster of epic proportions, emphasis on the E, as in Matt Eberflus. Then immediately when that happens, I go, he can't ever be the coach again. And it's just, it's not even like one of those situations where it's like, he literally can't go back. You can't send him back in that locker room. Like, it's just plain and simple. You can't, as an owner, even though the Bears are basically run by their CEO, because the owner isn't very present, apparently, you can't send him back in there in an effort to try and lead that team. When you've got guys like Keenan Allen said, I feel like the players did enough to win. When you've got Caleb Williams openly admitting, like, yeah, I had to call the last play. when you have a situation where every fan in the world is going, I can't believe that just happened. When you're already in a losing streak, the confidence has already waned. You have to remove the problem. And that's what they did. So kudos to the Chicago Bears for being willing to do it, because some teams are not. The Bears have never fired a coach in season in their entire history. Matt Eberflus, congratulations. You were the first. So with that being said, we're moving on Thanksgiving. A little bit of breaking news into the show. Trevor Lawrence, he went on injury reserve earlier. Not really, you know, I thought it was concussion based. It turns out he is undergoing surgery on his AC joint. So remember the AC joint that he sat out with for a while? He is going to undergo surgery on the AC joint in his left shoulder in the next few weeks. And that is why he ended up going on IR. Mix that with the concussion, you have the perfect recipe for injury reserve. So Trevor Lawrence is headed to injury reserve due to a significant AC joint injury in his left shoulder that he will undergo surgery on the next couple of weeks. So major news into the NFL landscape for one of the young gunslingers in the league. And of course, that's been posted all over our Just In Time Sports social medias with the social media handle at JTime Sports. But anyway, back to our scheduled show. So the Cincinnati Bengals defense is an absolute joke. It is a travesty. It's a disaster. Seriously, I'm honestly only talking about this because A, they've been ruining some of my bets, and B, they have somehow, some way, the propensity to continue to, I don't know, let's see here, not be ready to play football games. Wonder who that falls on. Oh, it's Zach Taylor. It's only the guy that I've been screaming should be fired for weeks now, continuing to allow his team to not be ready and continue repeatedly in order to not have themselves in the best position to win games. At this point, I'm almost simply because the owner doesn't like winning games. Like, his buyout can't be that substantial. Like, it's to the point where I'm like, does he have photos? Is he in league with the owner? Is the owner trying to lose games? I mean, like, what is the benefit of keeping Zach Taylor on that roster? And leading that roster, rather. But I would love to know. I honestly would love to know why he continues to be employed as a head coach in the NFL. I talked about the head coach of the Chargers, Brandon Staley. Honestly, now I honestly felt bad at a certain point for Brandon Staley because he was inexperienced. Some of that they gave him a job way too early, and when he couldn't do it, everybody was mad he couldn't do it. Or he's never been a head coach at anything. Not middle school, not high school, not college. And he gets a head coach job of the Los Angeles Chargers, honestly, while barely even being a coordinator. Because when you're an offensive coordinator under Sean McVay, that's more of you may run the meeting if McVay's busy. But if it's an offensive install meeting, McVay's the coach. And he's the offensive play caller. He's going to do the install. If it's a quarterback meeting, it's probably going to be McVay again. Oh, during game day, you're in the booth probably counting eligibles. Like, so having that job to then being the head coach of the Chargers is a jump. Being bad at it is not surprising. So I actually feel more bad for Staley. But back on track, Zach Taylor is an experienced head coach. He just sucks. And so I would gladly love for him to no longer be the head coach of the Bengals. The Kansas City Chiefs keep finding ways to win ugly. They're on a hot streak ish. I mean, Buffalo dismantled them, but you know they got a win last week against the Raiders. It was ugly, like all their wins. And we spoke about it last week how they're just not built to blow you out. They're not designed. It's just not in their DNA right now. The Lions are designed for them too to absolutely wreck you. That's what they're trying to do. The Chiefs trying to win the game, and they're usually winning it very, very ugly. Now they're not trying to win it ugly. That's just how this team shakes out. They win games very, very ugly. They survived one against the Raiders, where it took a snap off the chest of the Raiders in order for the Chiefs to win the game. I mean, that is how close the Chiefs got to losing because Brock Bowers seemed unguardable. The MVP race seems to be narrowing, and usually around this time of year, we get either a clear-cut winner or a couple of clear-cut candidates. And those candidates are Saquon Barkley and Josh Allen. I don't think anybody has a chance at it. I think if Joe Burrow had any kind of support, he would be in this race. But considering that he is, I think, 4-7, you kind of can't put him in the MVP race. I would, but logically, seriously, you honestly can't put him in the MVP race. And so, therefore, that leaves you with a few options, and the options are incredibly few. Again, in my opinion, it's Saquon Barkley or Josh Allen, and honestly, I would go Saquon Barkley. Josh Allen is playing well. He's playing really well. But if Saquon Barkley wins not only the NFL rushing crown, but yeah, I think he has triple threat, carries yards and touchdowns, and break Eric Dickerson's yards record, there is no way Saquon Barkley is not the MVP. And that's just plain and simple. That's a fact. They're going to win 13 games, 14 games. If he breaks ED's 2105 rushing record, he has to have the MVP and Josh Allen go Offensive Player of the Year. But usually it's reversed. Usually the best quarterback gets MVP and the best player gets Offensive Player of the Year. We're going to flip that if Saquon makes history. And then lastly, Jameis. Monday, the last game of week 13, Jameis Winston gave us the full, and I do mean full, Jameis Winston experience. Now, I say all the time, I'm like, Jameis Winston is the only quarterback that honestly, and I do mean honestly, every single throw, your brain does one of two things. This is either going to be the greatest thing, the greatest pass you've ever seen in your life, or you are going to be, and I do mean entirely, flabbergasted at the idea of the thought that he tried that pass. And that's pretty much what happened on Monday night. He had some throws that were just spectacular. I mean, you can look at the guy. He only receivers go for over 200 yards. Like, Jerry Jeudy goes for over two bills. Think 235 or something like that. Absolutely spectacular. Jameis Winston throws for 497 yards on 58 attempts. The QBR of 76. The problem is he throws two pick sixes, but he has four touchdowns, and he throws another interception. Like, that was full-blown Jameis Winston experience. It's heart racing and nerve pounding until the very last throw, and it always seems to come down to the very last throw. But up next, we're going to shift into NFL Week 14. Welcome back into the show. And now we're jumping into NFL Week 14. And we're going to start off with our Thursday night preview. We have Pack at Lions. Big game. It is in our Jacks pack, so we're not going to pick it. But it is a big divisional game. The Lions win this game. They have all but moved the Packers out of the way as far as winning the NFC North. And the only team they'll be in the running with is the Minnesota Vikings. So this is a big game for the Detroit Lions. The Lions are 11-1. If they get to 12-1, they'll have a two-game lead on the Vikings with five to go. Not sure if the Packers and the Vikings play again this season. Pretty sure they do. But this will go a long way to eliminating the Packers out of contention, because if they can get rid of the Packers, because right now they are It doesn't tell me. Right now, they are 2 games up on the Packers. They win this, they'll be 3 games up while owning a tiebreaker. So that would be huge, considering that they've already played and the Lions have already beat them. So if the Lions beat them again, they'll be 3 games up with 5 games left, and they will own the tiebreaker. With 4 games left, there'll be 3 games up plus tiebreaker, all but sealing the Packers out of the division. And the Lions and the Vikings do play on the last week of the season, which very well could decide the NFC North. And this is a huge game. If you're the Packers, this is your only chance to win your division. It's rare you get one of these games. And the NFL is doing a really good job with the scheduling. They're kind of, for lack of a better term, forcing these games in, because the Packers have the Vikings again. Because did the Packers beat the Vikings earlier this year? No, the Vikings beat the Packers. So the Packers have the Vikings again on December 29th. They have a chance at them. But the Lions get the Vikings it's a flex week. So week 17, they'll get their chance at the Vikings, but they can all but seal the Lions out, because earlier in the season, the Lions beat the Vikings. So they can all but seal the Lions out, and it may come down to both teams enter with 2 losses maybe. And then, you know, winner of week 17 gets the division, loser is the wild card team. I mean, because that winner could very well be the team that has the bye, because the only team really in contention for the bye besides that is Philly. So a lot riding on this game. One of the bigger Thursday night games you'll see in a very long time. Probably one of the better Thursday night games you're going to see in a very long time. You've got golf and love. You've got 2 teams that, like I said, Packers win, they open the division all the way up. Lions win, they seal the Packers completely out of the NFC North crown. So absolutely humongous game. We'll pick our winner. We'll talk about the winner in Jack's Pack. Falcons at Vikings. Another game in our Jack's Pack, so we won't talk about it. This is a game, huge game. Remember I said Minnesota can keep pace in their division? This is a game that Minnesota has to win, because they're a game behind the Packers. Technically a game and a half, because they've already lost to them. They have to continue to win and keep pace to where they can get it to week 17, kind of a win, and you get your division type game, because the Packers, you could be playing, that game could be the 1 seed game. Forget win your division and host the playoff game. That game could very well be a 1 seed type game. So you could go from the 1 seed with the bye and then hosting all the way to the Super Bowl to the 5th seed on the road, and you're on the road possibly all the way to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's the kind of game that Packers-Vikings Week 17 game could be, or Week 18 game, I'm sorry, could be. And then this kind of game the Vikings has to win. If you're the Atlanta Falcons, you have to keep you have to stay in front. You have to pace the NFC South. You have the advantage right now. Tampa, I think, is 1 game behind you, but you have to continue to pace the NFC South. Getting a win like a Vikings win may be huge to come back later in the course of tiebreakers, so on and so forth. So if you're Atlanta, you've got to get this win. If you're the Vikings, you've got to keep pace with the Detroit Lions. The Seattle Seahawks at the Arizona Cardinals. Keeping up with the theme, another game in our Jack's Pack, so we're not going to pick a winner here. But the Seahawks and the Cardinals are fighting for the NFC West, the jumbled mess of the NFC West. The 49ers are finally in the Super Bowl hangover stretch part of the thing. Injuries are killing them. You have Trent Williams off personal reasons. All prayers to his family dealing with the loss of their infant baby. Newborn baby. Christian McCaffrey with the PCL injury. He is out probably for the rest of the year. Brock Purdy was gimpy with a shoulder. They only, as of this morning, had 1 healthy running back. They've since signed 2. Ayuk is already out. Kittle's getting beat up. They're finally Hufanga. I don't think he's hadn't played this season. They're finally at a point where a team hits the wall, and then they hit it again. And then they hit it again, and they just continue to ram their head into this what appears to be never-ending wall, an impenetrable wall, and eventually they just fall apart, and they can't get through. And it's kind of what the 49ers feeling like this iteration of the Niners is done. Now, they have some of their pieces They're going to have Bosa probably another 2-3 years. You're going to have Kittle another 2-3 years. You're going to have CMC probably another 2-3 good years. You have Debo. You know, Purdy's young. Like, you'll have some of your base, but Trent Williams won't be around very much longer. A lot of the Fred Warner probably got 2 years of prime left. So they're going to have to start retooling some of their top guys. And that's where it get dicey as far as continuing to sustain the success. I also think their coaching quality has gone down. I think Robert Saleh being reunited with the Niners could be something that the Niners look to do. But they're going to have to figure something out because they are just absolutely falling apart. Because of which, the Seahawks and the Cardinals have their shot to take control of the division. The Niners are beat up. The Niners are faltering. If you're the Seahawks, it's your chance to push the Cardinals and everyone else back two games away from you with 4 to 5 games left. If you're like, and that's all you can ask for, I have a 2-game lead with 4 games left to host the first round of the playoffs in Seattle. If you're Arizona, you have a chance to not only close that gap, you have a chance to sit side by side with the Seattle Seahawks, top of your division, potentially 2 games clear of the Niners and the Rams, and you're just sitting there going, we race Seattle, winner gets home field, loser may not even make the playoffs. So that's something that it has to be immense pressure on both sides. We'll see how they respond. Chargers and Chiefs, a game where, in my opinion, the Chargers cannot allow the Chiefs to win ugly. The Chiefs have a mental thing over the AFC West. It reminds me of the Patriots was in the AFC East and dominant, where they won like 19 of 20 divisions, and the year they didn't win, it's because Brady gets hurt. Matt Castle finds a way to go 11-6. They don't even make the playoffs. And then the division winner is the Jets, I think at 12-5 or something like that. Like, or 12-4, you know, back of 16 games. So, and it's just, you are the Chargers. You cannot allow the Chiefs to win ugly. The Chiefs are not going to blow you out. That has been proven. They're not going to do it. Against the worst teams in the league, they weren't blowing them out, especially the way that Vegas thought they should have. So, if you're the Chargers here, this gets down to Chiefs up 3 with 8 minutes left and Chargers have the ball. You have to put together a touchdown drive. You have to bleed the clock and put together that drive. Like, it is crazy how the Chiefs are, it feels like every week, inventing ways to win football games. But I think the Chargers, if you're going to be taken seriously as a contender in the AFC, if Jim Harbaugh is going to be taken seriously as an NFL head coach, if Justin Herbert wants to be taken seriously as an elite quarterback, not just elite talent, elite quarterback, you're going to have to win this game. Preferably, you win it convincingly. Now, I don't think you can win it convincingly, but if it's possible, you win this game by 14 points, and then that will really show the NFL that you mean business. It is not in my Jack's pack. I do think the Chargers get it done. I think the Chargers escape maybe on the last second field goal, touchdown about 10 seconds left, something where the Chiefs don't have a whole lot of time to come back. But I do think that the Chargers ultimately escape. And a few quick hitters. Trevor Lawrence, we talked about that. His AC joint surgery came out. Micah Hyde has returned back to Buffalo for his 8th season in Buffalo. He will retire after this season. He's on their practice squad. Baltimore Ravens' Deontay Johnson has been suspended for 1 game due to conduct detrimental to the team for refusing to enter a game when called upon. And there's some kicker injury situations. The Kansas City Chiefs are making another switch. Scott Schrader has been injured. He's headed to injury reserve, which means that Cade York won the kicking competition at practice with the other kicker. And so he will be the kicker for the McPherson's out for Cincinnati Bengals. That is how Cade York came to be in Cincinnati. The Kansas City situation is that Matthew Wright Yes, Matthew Wright is stepping up for Kansas City after Schrader has gone down and gone to injury reserve. So Matthew Wright's a new kicker in Kansas City, and Cade York is a new kicker in Cincy. So that is all I have for your NFL Week 14, and now we move into our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Our pretty successful NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. As of right now, we're sitting at 54% on the year, 35-28-2. We're sitting at 54%, which some people don't count ties because you get your money back in the tie. I mean, it could depend on what you do. Some people get your money back in the tie. Others say you didn't win, so you lose. Like I said, so we're going to count it as a loss. We're going to count it against ourselves. It's a tie. We're going to count it against ourselves. I do think ties, though, you get your money back. I think it is one of those, like, no bet moments. But we're going to count it against us. So 54% on the year. We want to get that up a little higher to 56-57% so we can get into that professional better range. Because, again, I said it before, but 56% and up covers all of your juices. So you really, that's what professional bettors want to get. Professional gamblers want to get in order to be deemed successful. We were 2-3 last week, in my opinion. It's one of those weeks where, like, yeah, I think the process is right. I love the numbers, and it just didn't come together. The Bears number looked great, and then the Lions stopped scoring in the second half. And then instead of getting four touchdowns in the first half, they had three field goals on a touchdown. You had 18 points. They win that game. Cincinnati had the Bengals had the worst defense on planet Earth. The Houston Texans, I don't know what they're doing right now. And that was my three misses. So, again, I thought the process was great. It just didn't come together. But I'm feeling good about the numbers this week. Vegas is starting to autocorrect. I didn't love any number at any point. It was kind of hard putting these five together, but looking at them, I think I'm on the right side of these bets. Honestly, let's get right to it. Our first number is Eagles -13 versus the Panthers. Take the Eagles, hammer the Eagles. The way the Eagles play football, it's not conducive to a bad team. If you're a bad team, you want to be spread out. You want passing concepts because you want to be able to peel off to the quarterback. When you're bad, and the Eagles can lean on you with Saquon and lean on you with Jalen. You know what I'm saying? And lean on you with, can't think of his name, but the smaller running back. And they can just continue to lean on you and tush push you and sweep and lean. Eventually being a bad team, going to look up and you're down 24-10 and you're going to tap out of that game. And the Eagles are designed to run the ball down your throat. So it is, to me, going to get very, very ugly. In the link, which is perfect for Philadelphia Eagles fans. My second number is Bills -4 at the Rams. Take the Bills. The Bills have been thrashing everyone. It's going to effectively feel like a Bills home game as the Rams just don't put butts in seats. It's usually the other team. And so it's going to feel somewhat like a Bills home game. It's going to be a little warmer than they anticipate, than they're accustomed to this time of year. And, you know, it is absolutely in huge game for the Bills. And like I said, the Rams, man, we talked about them a couple minutes ago. They are enthralled in that NFC East win the division or go home. They are permanently embattled in that battle. But the Rams just have to win this game if they plan on any chance, in my opinion, of winning the NFC West and hosting a playoff game. The Seattle Seahawks +2.5 at the Arizona Cardinals. This was a game that if it's even, I stay away from. And I'm not even sure that the Seahawks are going to cover the 2.5. I just don't, again, Arizona, just don't understand. I just don't think they're built to blow people out. I think they're getting 3 points for home field. If they were neutral field, it'd be -0.5 points to Seattle. But it is a problem that Seattle's getting plus money. I honestly thought that since Arizona and Seattle basically wasn't what. I just thought that they would go, you know, neutral point here, but wasn't what with home field advantage is a plus +3. So it makes sense. It makes sense. As far as the betting side, I've got Seattle. I just don't think they're going to get Kyler Murray a lot of time. I think they're going to have an interception sack party. And I think it's going to be a great time in the greater Northwest upon the Seahawks' return. Lions, -3 over the Packers. The Lions are the poster child for blowing somebody out. I mean, they attempt to do it every single game. And while I don't know if it'll happen fast against the Packers or slow against the Packers, but it's going to happen. It has happened to every single opponent that they have had so far, sans the Bears. But the Lions are going to ramrod the Green Bay Packers. But speaking of Green Bay Packers, they have a guy in Jordan Love. They have a guy in Josh Jacobs who a lot of people are beginning to believe in, those two specifically. And if those two can set the tone, Jordan Love and Josh Jacobs, one by air and one by ground, you're looking at potentially an upset with the Packers. However, I just don't think there'll be enough to contend with the Lions. And then lastly, Falcons +6 at Vikings. Take the Falcons. You get nearly a touchdown against the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, that, you know, while the Vikings defense has been really, really good, they have had their moments of, you know, just they've had their moments of just terrible defensive work. And I think that it'll be helped a little bit by their offense with the Vikings. I think if they get some offense going, it'll help their defense. Because you're not feeling like you have to be perfect because you have a little bit of point cushion. Or, you know, like, if I'm not the best, I can get into my office and they're going to help. And that helps their confidence. So, again, the numbers are Eagles -13 over the Panthers. Bills -4 over the Rams. Seahawks +2.5 over the Cardinals. Lions -3 over the Packers. And Falcons +10 over the Vikings. I'm sorry, Falcons +6 over the Vikings. Up next, we're going to shift to the association, talk about what's going down there. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about the NBA and what is going down with the association. Really quickly, not a whole lot of NBA talk to talk about. We'll save that for after football season. You guys know that. But I do want to get into some of these headlines that's going down. So we have injuries in the NBA and feel like what's new. Kevin Durant is out 1 to 2 weeks due to a left calf strain. He'll be reevaluated in 1 week. He just came back from a lower leg injury. That's the issue when you get older. For LeBron James, it looked like he hit a wall. I don't think J.J. Redick finally was like, yeah, the whole 82-game thing feels unsustainable. And it was like LeBron James hit a wall. For Kevin Durant, he's dealing with lower leg injuries. For Steph Curry, the explosions aren't there. He can summon the greatness when he has to, but it's just the big explosion, big explosive moments aren't there as much. For some of our legends, and like I said, you're getting injuries from Kevin Durant, and you're getting just over his last 23 from LeBron James and starting shooting three ball. So that's just it's just a hard time to watch. But Kevin Durant's out with a left calf strain, or left ankle sprain. I'm sorry, left ankle sprain. Zion Williamson is expected to miss at least another 2 more weeks due to his hamstring injury. Shams Charania and the local Pelicans people have been in a beef because Shams Charania reports one thing and then local Pelicans people report something else. And it looks like Shams Charania has been right. And so, but Shams has said he's not close. He's potentially months away. Then Shams said the Pelicans announced he's out at least 2 more weeks. Shams is saying that he's getting injections in the hamstring. I just seen a recent video of him. He was at Trey Murphy's event. It looked like he was heavier, and it looked like he was like wobbling more. Like he was trying to like not limp, but limp. So if he's limping, he is a long way away. And if he's gaining weight, that means he's not really training that hard, and he's even longer away. I'm hoping both of those things aren't true. I'm hoping it's just a big green sweatsuit, and he's not, you know, we're hoping for the Ides of March for his return date. Like, you know, so hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully it is 2 to 3 more weeks. He's practicing for a hard week, and then he's on the court by New Year's Day. And then Paul George and Joel Embiid, the most disappointing duo in a very long time, probably since Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, continue to be out for games. Embiid has only played, I think, in 4 games he was eligible for. Paul George may have been 6. I mean, these two have just, I mean, they're doing to the Sixers worse than what Paul George and Kawhi did to the Clippers. Took a lot of money, get a whole lot of expectations, a whole lot of eyes, and then just don't show up. Whether it's willingly or unwillingly, they just don't show up. The NBA Cup has reached the knockout round. The Final Four in the East is Hawks versus Knicks, Magic versus Bucks, and in the West, it is Mavs versus Thunder, Warriors versus Rockets. The winner of each game will play in the semifinals in Vegas. The winner of the semifinal game plays the bonus 83rd game, which would be the NBA Cup Championship that apparently doesn't count towards regular or postseason. So there's that. But that is what's happening in the NBA. And then, of course, the Los Angeles Lakers look all over the place, although they seem to have found something in rookie Dalton Knecht. But until LeBron James no longer looks like he's an 80-year-old man, they are going to continue to struggle because he's going to play a lot of minutes while looking like said 80-year-old man. But up next, we're going to shift to college football and talk about our 2-minute drill. Welcome back into the show, and now we are going to the college football 2-minute drill. Now, you know, standard protocol, like we've been doing the past few weeks, I have a list of topics I want to get through in college football, but college football's newest obsession, something I'm sure we're going to see in the conference championship weekend, along with the playoff. The 2-minute drill will come into effect at some point. And so we're going to practice it now. 2 minutes have been placed on the clock, and my timer starts now. Early signing day was today at the land of the flips. I'm an LSU fan, and I'm rooting for Deion Sanders. I'm keeping my eye on those two recruiting boards mostly. LSU netted most of what they wanted to, lost Derek Meadows to Alabama, flipped Solomon Thomason from Florida State. Of course, they already lost Bryce Underwood and Bryce Underwood and Cade Phillips. Underwood to Michigan, Phillips to Texas. Brian Kelly was very open about it. Basically, your brand is going to have a financial backing. You're no longer going to just be able to recruit on just your brand. If you want to do this, you're going to have your finances, which is why I think Deion Sanders is a huge fan of the portal, because he can get kids out of the portal. Yes, you have to pay kids out of the portal, but he feels he can prove it better with a proven kid out of the portal. I can go to my boosters, I can go to my fundraisers and raise money for a kid they've seen play, juxtaposed some high school they were just telling them is good. So I think that's going to be the next big thing. Championship weekend is going to have massive implications on the college football field. You're looking at Boise State. They're trying to play their way in, and Ashton Gentry's solo showcase. Travis Hunter is not playing, along with Cam Ward. Neither are playing on championship weekend. Ashton Dinty is. This is your chance to show up. You're looking at Texas and Georgia, two teams that are in. Penn State and Oregon, two teams that are in. Clemson, by way of winning, could knock Alabama out of the playoff. And the winner of Iowa State, Arizona State, picks up the Big 12 slot. So that could be a huge all-around moment there. The transfer portal is going to be very interesting. No monster names running yet. That quarterback from Liberty is going to command a very high paycheck. Slaughter, I believe, is his name. He's going to command a very high paycheck in the portal. LSU, like I said, turned out pretty fine. We netted two of our cornerbacks. We flipped in Solomon Thomas. We are going to be fine there. Colorado did a very good job with their freshman recruiting. They're going to murder the portal. And the college football playoff is fixable. But we will talk about the playoff probably after the last ranking next time. Whew, that's a heck of a two-minute drill. The ball was in the air when I got that last thing off. I snapped the ball. But that is all I have for you today. Make sure that you follow the social media handle at JTimeSports on all your favorite social medias in order to stay up to date and current with your new information and getting updates on the podcast. And as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Now, this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.